Welcome back to Insights Unlocked. In this episode, Annie McMillan talks with Dave Hora about the evolution of UX research and Dave's recommendation for UX researchers to be successful moving forward. If you don't know Dave, you should. We've been sharing around the virtual office some of his recent essays on the topic. They are worth the read. You'll find links to them in the show notes. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to Insights Unlocked, an original podcast from User Testing, where we bring you candid conversations and stories with the thinkers, doers, and builders behind some of the most successful digital products and experiences in the world, from concept to execution.
Welcome to the Insights Unlocked podcast. I'm Nathan Isaacs, Senior Manager for Content Production at User Testing. And joining us today as host is User Testing CEO, Andy McMillan. Welcome, Andy.
Hey, everyone.
And our guest today is Dave Hora. Dave is the founder of Dave's Research Company, where he helps product teams drive critical initiatives with the right mix of data, insight, and common sense. He began professional research work in 2011, eventually starting the practice as the first research hire at six companies, including PlanGrid and Instacart. Now, Dave is based in Porto, Portugal, and works with companies across the globe. He writes regularly on research and its coevolution with product practice, is an amateur winemaker, and holds a brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hello, Andy and Nathan. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, welcome to the show, Dave. That's a pretty awesome intro. There's a lot of good stuff to unpack in there. What we're going to do today is mostly talk about the future of research. I find some of the content you write to really be thoughtful about where we're all going and the impacts of technology on that. But as part of that discussion, I'd like to talk a little bit about you. You were recently in Japan, you shared, participating in a week-long internship on how to make sake. And I found that to be really interesting. And I bring it up as it's a good example of an interest in how do we make good things, which is maybe at the heart of how design and research works. So to begin with, what was it like learning to make sake?
I lived in a brewery in Japan between Osaka and Kyoto for a week, and I did all of the work. It was really quite amazing. It wasn't as hard as winemaking. I didn't have to lift tens of thousands of kilograms of grapes, only tens of kilograms of rice, but I quite enjoy sake, and I think a key to understanding anything that you enjoy or you want to work in is seeing and being a part of how it's made.
I agree, and I think that's maybe part of what we're going to talk about is, you know, seeing how things are made, and we talk a lot about tech products and how they're made. The article that you wrote that really resonated with me, where I immediately sent a note to Nathan, our producer, who was on the show here with us, and said, we got to talk to Dave on the Human Insight, Insight Unlocked podcast, and it was the user research and its inevitable evolution. It's a really great piece, and I think it lays out for folks this idea that the cost curve is shifting. The value is maybe increasing, but the budget pressures are sort of pushing down. And so could you talk a little bit about how you thought through those forces all coming together and maybe talk a little bit about, for people who haven't read the piece, the sort of thesis behind, you know, user experience research and design and some of the evolution that that's going to go through.
Yes. And you've actually reframed it quite nicely in a way that I wasn't thinking about in the language of the cost curves and the pressure there. But I think I agree. And the conclusion is the same. My thesis was largely what we're doing in user research compared to what we were doing 10 or 15 years ago is a much more understood set of activities. And that means that the way that we undertake them, the amount of effort that it takes to undertake them is decreasing. And the amount of knowledge that we as an industry have about how the craft of user research itself works is increasing. But what we're seeing because of that and what we need to be aware of now is that user research is only one small piece of the puzzle. And the user of user research are the product teams who are actually taking these insights and weaving them into our ongoing processes. So as we look to the future of user research, I think we actually need to shift our view a level higher and look to the future methods of product development that will unfold along with a now more commoditized version of research.
Yeah, I think that's good framing. The feeling I have is that, you know, commoditization always makes people nervous when you work in an area, but sometimes it's the big opportunity that something that was hard and bespoke and sort of artisanal in nature becomes something that's much more accessible and broadly available. And I think that's the inflection point we're at, where if you think back to the start of, you know, careers in user experience research, those were expensive research surveys to conduct that you had to have a facility and a place, and you brought people in, and it took an enormous amount of hours and cost to analyze and get that feedback. And now technology has really shifted that. When I think about what it takes to get 10 people from your core audience to go through and give you feedback on your app, you know, technology can help you do that in minutes, not hours. You can have that feedback done at a fraction of the cost. And what that should enable us to do is to, in my view, sort of open the aperture of how often could we do this? Where could we do this? How could this be part of a process like an agile process, because it's now agile? Whereas 10 or 15 years ago, like I always tell the story, I did one of these when I was at Salesforce, and we paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it took months for them to go talk to 30 of our users. That doesn't really work when you're doing 2-week sprint cycles. You can't tell everybody, okay, everybody go home for a couple of months while we wait for this research to come in. But if we're talking about minutes, not days or weeks or months, it really does change that. And so in a lot of ways, technologies, whether it's user testing or something else, I think are playing a role in this evolution. And now we're using AI to sort of help with some of that analysis. So, you know, maybe there's an overused analogy. I'm a hockey guy by background, but Wayne Gretzky has this very famous quote of skate to where the puck is going, not where it is or where it's been. How should researchers maybe skate to where the puck is going? Where does this ability, if you were coaching a room of UX research professionals or research ops, and they're saying, where do I put my career in a couple of years? In 2 or 3 years, where do I want to be? Where do you coach them to go?
You've got a lot of threads here, but I'll answer the first and then maybe go backwards. The first thing that I would say to consider is that while it's getting easier and untrained researchers now have more access to the same methods that used to be in the domain of trained expert researchers, it doesn't mean that they're doing it with the same rigor, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they know how to insert the right pieces at the right time. And so you mentioned 2-week sprints, and it's not often the case that the challenge that we're working on in product development perfectly fits into 2-week sprints. But one thing that we're seeing with our methodology right now is that it's being shunted into this 2-week cycle because technology is allowing us to speed it up. So when I look at where I think research is going and what we're going to do, I think it's actually playing in this space of when we get better at understanding what a product team is doing at each stage in its process, what the real questions are and what that activity looks like, it's understanding this one may be 1 week, this one may be 3 weeks, this one may be 4 weeks, but for each of them, there's a pretty clear sequence of things that we need to do. And along that sequence, there are different places where research and insights, when injected appropriately, really drive, guide, and accelerate that process. So it's a long way of saying.
Do you think, sorry to interrupt, but it's well said. Do you think part of the role then of a researcher is to know when and how to get inserted in the process? So, you know, are you as a researcher thinking about how do I enable a team to do reasonably good research, right? Some guardrails. When should they do it versus always doing it? Like, has that become part of the job? Because that's a very thoughtful way to think about it, but who decides that?
It's a nice question. I, as a researcher, have built a lot of my career coming in as the first researcher in a company, but in some ways, the last function to the party. Product, design, engineering, all fairly well established, all with their own cadence. And the question for me is not how can I be doing research, it's where do I fit my work into what theirs is to build trust and guide the process so that over time we can shift the process to something that actually works better for all of us. So it's baked into my perspective, and I do think it's something that effective researchers and effective research teams do. But I don't know if that's the domain of research, because anyone in the product team with good process sensibility who understands how these initiatives unfold can do that kind of guiding work. From my perspective, we are one of the better suited functions to do that because we understand what the inputs are and how the team can act on them through repeated use of the methods and techniques we have at our disposal.
Do you think as an industry we've inflicted enough sort of change management on that process to sort of talk about it in terms of process? Because I think when I talk to research teams, I hear a lot about research methodology, but maybe not enough about product building methodology. Do you think that's one of the skill sets we need to pick up more on, is how to talk in terms of product methodology?
Yes, and I say that because my practice as an independent consultant pushes me there when I'm looking to move up the stack and find the right value. I have been working in research and using our methods and techniques for quite some time. I know how they fit. Just doing the work doesn't necessarily guarantee a better product outcome. So if a product team comes to me and says, hey, we're thinking about launching this idea, I think the worst thing that I can do is say to them, we can do this kind of study, and I can like report on you a go, no-go decision with this type of generative research and this type of evaluative concept testing. That is not helpful to them, and it's, if I think about them as my user and my customer, it's a bit disrespectful to what they're really trying to achieve. So from that perspective, I'm trying to design a project and a process that's going to help them either launch and move their idea into the right place to learn from, or show them why it's not going to succeed and why it may be harmful or non-viable. So I generalize my experience as a consultant when I say yes and, but when I think about where leverage is in the organizations, I think we are not very smart or practiced, or let's say skilled in the craft of running product initiatives well, and are still falling back to one size fits all methodology discussions rather than specific sequences and techniques that we should be using for the work at hand.
I like that. You talk about a concept called internal loops in your on your site, and external loops as well. But when you talk about internal loops and sort of how to align the work that researchers do with those internal loops, can you explain a little bit of what you mean by that? I think we're sort of touching on it here, but I want to get to the terminology because I really like it. Like, how do you think of those loops, and how should researchers, you know, engage in that conversation? So, you know, most of our audience is a mix of designers and researchers. We definitely get some product folks and some marketers. But if you're a researcher and you're listening to the podcast and you're like, oh, what Dave's saying resonates with me, but like, how do I go have that conversation? How do they talk about these loops? How do they think about that?
Yeah, I think that there are two kinds of loops in the organization, in this framing, that we can work with. And one I would call the external loop. And that's something that we need to take an action, go out and learn from the market, learn from the customer context, pull that back in and use it as an input. And that can be something that's as broad as a big, like we're launching a new product into an adjacent market initiative, or as short as we have done a user interview. And it's really these shorter, simpler cycles that we as researchers tend to think about. They live over the course of this long initiative, but where change in the product organization is driven is from the internal cycles. And by internal cycles, I mean things that don't rely on external context. That's the daily scrum meeting, the weekly sprint planning meeting, the monthly all-hands meeting, the annual roadmap planning. These are artificial in some sense because the organization dictates it, or public reporting dictates what the organization does. But these are the places where research needs to participate in order to make sure that what we learn from external loops and external context actually make it into internal consciousness and internal decision-making.
I like that a lot. And I think it addresses what I hear experienced research professionals talk to us about, which is that their work can sometimes feel ad hoc. Mm-hmm. And it is viewed by the research team and sometimes by the constituents that ask for it as highly valuable, but they don't always feel like it's then highly actionable or acted upon, right? The road of UX research is littered with really good findings that didn't get implemented. And I really like the concept of, you know, make it part of your responsibility to think about how the organization makes decisions and the cadence of those decisions and how do you make sure that the work is inflicting an impact on those decisions. I think it's a really good, like, that's a really good way to think about how to resolve that sort of tension, right? If the research isn't being brought up in a sprint meeting, it isn't being brought up in a stand-up, it isn't part of the roadmap process or being attributed to the research, it's really hard then at budget time for people to say, you know what's really important to us is this research that we do, right? No matter how good the research is. And so I think that's really useful guidance. And I would imagine most folks, without a lot of effort, could sit down and map out what those loops are in their organization and then maybe have a really specific conversation with their team. Like, how do we impact these loops? And I think that's a great way to drive some of that access that people really crave.
This is an exercise I have done in one workshop. And in some ways, I think it signifies a basic respect for the organization that we're working in. I have worked with researchers who don't go to any of the scrum meetings or sprint planning meetings for the teams that they're working with because it seems irrelevant to them. And then they try to present their findings to the engineering team and wonder why the engineering team isn't paying attention. And I think it's self-evident. If what they're doing doesn't feel important to you and you don't respect it and you won't work to understand it, what ground do you have for them to try and understand your work? Or do you think that they're going to come from and try to bridge that gap?
I think that's really thoughtful and great advice for folks. So tell me a little bit about how the site came about. I really enjoy the essays that you write. I've shared several of them around our company. How did that come about? Did you just decide one day that, you know, I've got this background to share? Did somebody encourage you? Like, how did Dave's research site come about?
I, in 2017, wrote my first good article. It was called The Researcher's Journey, and I was working at PlanGrid. My manager at the time, Alyssa Briggs, was the one who brought me on to start the research team there, and I told her that I was interested in writing something. She encouraged me to write and then almost kind of forced me to make sure I pulled the team in and got cross-functional feedback on the article. And I was really surprised by both the value that it had to me as a research manager to understand what I was trying to help my team move through, and also the value that the community at large got from it. So I don't think I wrote anything for a few years, but after that, I did another big project on the back of that with the Research Ops community, the Research Skills Framework. And that's the entire website at researchskills.net. I co-led that with Tomomi Sasaki, and we did global workshops with researchers. Almost 400 people who do research participated, and we laid out what is the value chain of research? How does this work? And I realized, to circle back to the beginning of our conversation, it's really important for me to try and figure out how the things that I like work. And so this is an ongoing pursuit. I do research work. I write about research and how it goes. And through the writing, I figure it out. I get better, and I can help our community grow. And now as I shift my aperture a bit wider to also look at the product process, you'll see that that's where some of the writing is starting to shift. And for me, it's both a means of signaling where I'm going and for figuring out what I think is going on a bit out loud.
I think it's extremely well written. And I would add, in addition to your integrating the thoughts of the product organization into it, I think you also do a really good job talking about business constraints and external market forces and sort of the things that I think researchers, we get very focused on our users, which is really important, but sometimes, you know, it can be a bit of tunnel vision compared to what else is happening. And I think you do a great job helping researchers sort of bring that perspective into what they're doing that I think is just really, really powerful. So let me give you a final question, which I think is a great one to wrap up on. What advice would you hope researchers take away from this episode and then act on? So you write all this content, you have this great perspective. If people aren't going to davesresearch.com, you definitely should be. There's great stuff there. But what advice would you hope people take away from this?
For researchers, I think the most important thing is to understand the larger sequences of work that your research is one element of. You are going to design your work better, you're going to understand it in context better, and you're going to understand the partners that you work with better when you realize one insight, one finding, one study, whatever it may be, is just one more step that pushes a larger process along. And there's immense value and even power and influence that come, not in a dirty way, but just by the nature of understanding what's happening, power and influence over that process when you have some sight into it and you can share that with the people who are working on it with you.
I think that's great advice. So, Dave, where else can people follow you? So I've mentioned your site, davesresearch.com. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the best place, but is there other places online if people are interested in your perspectives where they should follow you?
I write on davesresearch.com and I'm on LinkedIn. I think those are the big places.
All right. Well, Dave, it was really nice chatting with you. I think your perspective's outstanding and again, really well laid out in your post. And so thank you for that. I think it's a great contribution to our industry and our community. And it was really enjoyable to have you on the show.
Wow. Thanks so much, Andy and Nathan, for inviting me here too.
Want to keep the conversation going? You can find the show notes at usertesting.com/podcast. If you haven't already, don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or Google Play so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed today's show, please share it with a friend or leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And until next time, this is Insights Unlocked, an original podcast from User Testing.